Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the show, the Creative Insights Podcast. I'm your host Mike, and I'm happy to be in your ears today. Well, I'm so excited for the person you're about to meet. An incredible guest I'm thrilled to share with you. His name is Steve Babcock. Steve is the Chief Creative Officer of VaynerMedia. That's right. The world-famous marketing and communication agency founded by Gary V. Gary Vaynerchuk. Well, we know a lot about Gary, but I'm truly grateful to be speaking with Steve, the CCO of the ID company VaynerMedia. We're going to cover lots of topics, and I'm sure you're going to find it informative and entertaining. We're going to learn how Steve got started in the digital landscape, but also what a typical day looks like at VaynerMedia, and to be working for the hustle king himself, Gary V. Well, we got all of that coming right up. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you the man leading VaynerMedia's creative team, Steve Babcock. So here's the big question. How are creative entrepreneurs like us, who live in an ever-changing world, who need to keep up with all the latest trends and developments, how do we keep enjoying what we do to thrive and inspire others? That's the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Mike Reinhardt, and this is the Creative Insights Podcast. Well, hey, Steve, welcome, and well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great.
So how is New York? Are you in New York right now?
Yes, I am. It's nice. Weather's starting to actually turn to spring, so that's always a very big plus in New York. Yeah, it's nice. I don't know, where are you at the moment?
I'm currently in the Netherlands, so close to Amsterdam.
Oh, cool.
So have you ever been to the Netherlands?
I have not. I have never been.
Okay, so but you do travel a lot, I guess.
Yeah, mostly I'm domestic, though. I mostly stay to the States. I will get to to London quite a bit, but other than that, it's usually New York or LA.
All right. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'm really thrilled to talk to you and ask some questions about how it is working at VaynerMedia. But I'm really also interested in learning more about you and how did you get started in the creative digital space? And did you always want to be creative?
Yeah, you know, it's I grew up in a very small town in Idaho, southern Idaho, which is not really West Coast, but it's West-ish.
Right.
And I grew up there and was the youngest of five kids. And everybody in my family, for the most part, was creative in some way. There was music talent. There was art. Even I had my older brothers who, back in the early 80s were making like stop motion videos with Super 8 cameras and things. So there was always creation and creative around me, and I enjoyed it myself and kind of found my place. So my dream always as a kid growing up was I wanted to be a director, a movie director, to make, go to Hollywood, do that whole thing. And so when I got to the age of, going to school, I looked into, started taking some film classes. I was going to be a film major. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing that, I needed a job. So I took a job, a friend of a friend of a friend, got me a job at an advertising agency in town, and I could work in the mailroom. It was really good because I could still go to school, and it was an easy job, a good college job. But while I was there, I discovered that advertising was pretty cool, pretty creative. And I befriended a lot of the talent there, the creatives there. I kind of came to this realization of like, well, they're basically making like mini movies and things like that. Anyway, it looked fun. It felt cool. And it was like, and it also felt more attainable than being able to make it in Hollywood as a director. And I also wasn't really loving the classes around film. It just felt super analytical and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so long story short, I pivoted and decided to get into advertising, and have done that ever since. I've stayed with it on the creative side of advertising. And yeah, so it was one of those things where I was like, you know, not really planned. It was a bit of an accident, but a happy accident.
Right. Yeah. So you're always, grew up in a creative family and started out from the beginning in the creative industry, the advertising industry, coming up with all kinds of ideas. And I saw that you worked for big brands like Domino's, and you even invented something like the Domino's pizza tracker.
Yeah, that's right.
So how did you come up with such kind of ID?
Yeah, well, that one's interesting, that was at a previous agency where I worked, and we were probably within our first year of that client engagement, and they had given us an assignment to increase the volume of traffic to their .com. Essentially, this was a time in that category where they realized, wow, if we get more people to order pizza online, that has several cost efficiencies. One, it minimizes the margin of human error, like an actual person taking your order on the phone. It cuts down that cost, operational cost of having to pay that person to answer the phone. And in addition, the average ticket price from someone ordering online is, I can't remember. I wanted to say it was like 5 or 10, whatever, percentage or dollar. It's higher than if you called and ordered on the phone. And I think that's because, you go online, you order a pizza, and you click to go to your checkout, and all of a sudden you see all these awesome breadsticks and lava cakes and everything to add on to it. And visually, I think that makes people just go click. I want to add an, oh yeah, sure, I'll add some breadsticks. Boom, boom, boom. So all these reasons to do that. Mm. And, when we looked at that, I remember we were thinking about what we don't want to do is the typical thing where you say, you discount your product online for a while. Like that's the classic way. It's like, or a dollar off online to try to drive trial, and then people will get used to it and then make that a habit, of how, when they order pizza. So instead we were just trying to think of, well, how can we make ordering online, interesting or valuable without it being a discount? And there was a lot of, I worked with the Domino's team that I worked with, was just really, really great. And we had this idea which was based off of the finding that at a Domino's store, they have an actual button between each stage. So someone takes the order, they hit a button. Someone preps the pizza, they hit a button after they're done. It goes through the oven. The oven is timed at 6 minutes. And then someone boxes it up and runs it out to delivery, comes back and hits a button, and it cuts it in half. And the reason they do that is at the time the organization was highly, managers were compensated based on speed and efficiency and blah, blah, blah. So we're sitting there going, in every Domino's you own across the world, exactly where someone's pizza is in this process. That's amazing. Why don't we make that public facing and make it a thing that's exclusive to online ordering? And so it's actually really easy. The data existed. I think Domino's was actually already started to think into that space. And so we cracked that open for them and made the pizza tracker. And, now it's opened up beyond just ordering online, but it completely solved that brief, but also transformed.
Yeah.
This beginning of Domino's transformation from a pizza company to a technology company that makes pizza.
Right. Yeah. To come up with something like, that innovative, to really, come up with a brand new ID. Is that important? For brands to exceed, to come up with new IDs?
I think so. I think especially in marketing, people think, oh, marketing and advertising, that means we need to make an ad. We need to make some piece of content, some form of messaging. And the reality is that that may be the appropriate answer, but you don't really know unless you start with, what is the business problem we're trying to solve? Like, what is that? And if you can get really clear on that and really specific on that, then you open up your aperture of like, how would we do this? Mm-hmm. And it might be an ad, it might be a messaging problem, or more often than not, it's some sort of new product or new offering or a tweak to their operation model, like all kinds of things. So marketing, I think, and advertising, you know, most people look at it and what they see is what I feel is kind of the bare minimum of it. When done best, it actually creates real change. Because typically, you know, unless it's like unless the brief is like awareness, nobody knows about us, then that's appropriate to go, okay, well, let's do some advertising. Let's market to people. Let's get the word out so people know about you. For the rest of the problems, they're typically things that could be solved more effectively and more efficiently, as an actual thing other than marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good advertising, it must solve some kind of problem and also add some kind of value. Is that right?
That's totally right. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just adding to the clutter of the internet, you know, marketing. It's got to do something.
Yeah, I just read your post on Instagram. So you're now running a team and constantly looking for new talents. But you read somewhere in a post that it's more important to take care of the existing talents. And you say unicorns aren't found, but they're made. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, I think this notion of a unicorn or the times I always hear that thrown out is, you know, it's like the perfect employee, the creative person who can do 8 million things and do them well. And you know, as I've done this job at various stages throughout my career, you know, I understand it because I've had times in my career where I was a creative director and, you know, you're answering to two other layers above you. And you have all the pressure on you to be successful, to make impactful work, to change, you know, your brand's businesses and all those things. And so naturally, you know, and the best thing ever as a creative director is when you have reliable teams where, you know, when you're going to go review work, that it's a matter of just like adding style, you know, or even saying that one's, in my opinion, that one's better than that one, or these are all great, or have you tried this? Versus the time where you go in and go, okay, nothing is here, nothing works, I have to do all of this. So that notion of wanting, you know, really strong talent is important. But lately, I think in this industry, I've heard a lot, and that's where this phrase unicorn comes up. If everybody's like, no one's good enough. I need unicorns, I need unicorns, I need unicorns. And in a sense, it made me think a little bit about what the role of a creative leader really is, and especially about, you know, the times, the leaders I've had in my career who have thankfully for my benefit have done this really well. And that's the role of you're not just the shepherd of unicorns. You have to make them, you have to invest in your people, you have to take somebody who, you know, isn't on the level or isn't as good as you would wish they would, you know, were, and you have to figure out how to help them get to that place. Now, of course, there's always instances where someone's incapable or unwilling or all of that, and that's a different story. But for the most part, just that post was really just, it was on my mind a little bit about like, hey, you know, instead of, I do think it's a little different than like the people you have versus new people, because I believe new blood is very powerful and important and part of it too. But it's more about like, you're never going to find the perfect thing. Like, you know, like stop setting this bar of this thing that you think is out there that will make your job so amazingly easy. It's not there, and it's a waste of your time. And instead you could be spending a lot of your time and energy on turning your existing people or turning them closer to those unicorns.
And what kind of skill sets, you know, are the most important at this moment in the creative industry?
Yeah, I really believe that the swim lanes of creatives in advertising need to go away. Here at Vayner, we really blur them a lot. You know, historically, the way agencies made a lot of money was by creating a very complicated process, more of an assembly line. You know, to accomplish this one thing, it's going to take these 27 people 6 weeks to do it, and that's how you made a lot of money. You made the process long, laborious, and involve a person who checked off every single little box along the journey of that project. Mm-hmm. Now it's more about how do I, build a creative department where fewer people are required to do a job or to, screw in a light bulb. There's an old joke of, how many people does it take to screw in a light bulb? You know, the reality is, it's like we need to have fewer people per light bulb. Thus, we're screwing in more light bulbs simultaneously. So that means you look at people who are, especially nowadays, it's very common to find people who are somewhat ambidextrous when it comes to things. You know, you'll be like, well, I'm a designer, but I also edit really well. And I know photography. And here's a short video I shot in high school. Or, hey, I'm a writer, but I'm also a director. Sometimes you get very full spectrum. Like this person can write and design. They can do some animation, edit. All of those things are very important. And I don't like the notion of an old school title such as art director and copywriter, minimizing those things and, that array of offering and saying, no, you do this one job. And I believe it's an archaic sort of titling structure that is actually having an impact on the creative talent being more diverse. So we really look at, all over the place, really. I would say that a lot of the talent entering the workforce now, they were born with DSLRs and Creative Cloud and Adobe Premiere. So it's not uncommon for someone who's artistic and creative to be able to execute that across all of these channels because, back when I was growing up, when I was growing up, it was all analog, whatever. Yeah. You could be good at whatever it is that was available to you. So now it's that. So that also it's really interesting to find, especially when it comes to writing, I think comedy writers, improv writers are typically some of the strongest writers, not necessarily just for comedy, but they seem to be very self-aware and observational and just quick-witted. And, I've had a lot of success with, finding comedy people who have, grown a pretty good following on platforms like Instagram because they're just making entertaining or funny content where they're making music videos or whatever it is. And they're just doing that on their own. And I look at that and go, well, I want to hire you just to do that for clients. And and that's been I can teach you advertising, okay. But I can't really teach you the inherent creative gene. And so that's been a really good place too, is to find, and we've had a lot of those success stories here at Vayner.
Right. So somebody that is, has multiple talents, multiple skills, being creative and creating content for multiple channels. So what does a typical day look like at Vayner Media? Does it require all these skill sets, come up with new ideas?
Yeah, I would say one of the benefits of Vayner Media is there really are no 2 days that are the same. It's a big company. There's a lot of brands, a lot of things being made, a lot of things being explored and attempted. And so it's a bit all over the place. I would say, an individual person really typically, even if you possess a variety of those skills, you can't do them at the same time. So typically people still work in groups and work together. That group dynamic is very alive here. But your ability to chip in at various points of that group is where the diversity comes in. But for the most part, it's like you have an art creator, a copy creator, someone who's really good writer, someone who's really artistic and understands design and could probably do animation. And then you have someone who's very good at shooting and editing video. Typically those people will bond together and come up with ideas for our clients. and then make those ideas and then make them real with some, you know, paid media behind them, hopefully. And it's all in the, it's all about us, more or less experimenting with culture to our, in the hopes of identifying a spark, you know, putting something out there into the world that we see, ooh, there's a positive reaction to this idea that we put out there. Cool. Let's corroborate that evidence. Let's try some more. Let's keep going down this world, see where it takes us. And then eventually, you know, the goal is to get to a spot where you're like, we have enough of a signal here based on this idea that we can go to our client and help them understand, like, this is something we should invest in. This is something we should double down on. We should now take this to the next level, which may be a bigger production or, you know, whatever that next, something that feels a little bit more, you know, bigger advertising-esque. But it's a great process because you're making those calls. You're not making those calls subjectively. You're making those calls based on some actual market reaction to the work.
Okay, so you do a lot of testing, checking the data, if an ad is positive, getting good feedback.
Yeah, that's right. It's funny because I think it's semantics. Because around here, I do tell people it's like, because there's a phrase, test and learn. And I'm like, it's not test and learn. And it you could probably argue that it is, but just that world is a little, you know, that phrase typically is like A-B testing and things where it's like you're testing like whether it should be yellow or red. This is really more of like try and I don't know what I would say. It's not test and learn. It's like try and thrive. You know, like you believe everything is going, you believe everything you do will be successful. You're just doing a lot of them. You're not just doing one at a time. You're doing a lot of them. And then you are choosing to follow wherever there's the momentum. So, you know, sometimes everything might take off and be great, you know, and that's, and then you go make everything, but it's the constant. I don't know how to put this. You're constantly in like momentum mode, like finding momentum and then, and then going with it. So I think it is a little bit different than test and learn, but it's, you know, obviously similar that you're using a volume of approaches, a volume of at bats to help inform what you know, you'll go all in on.
What are you guys doing? How do you come up with the best ideas? Do you just sit in a room in the office or do you go outside? How do you come up with the best ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's different for everyone. You know, I've actually never been a good like group conceptor. I've never been good at, you know, all right, we don't have any ideas. Let's get together and come up with them. It's always created like a block for me to be in a room and throwing stuff out. I'm much more of a, hey, give me a little time by myself. Let's all go away, kind of write down everything and then come back and compare notes. And that's that I can do. Otherwise, it kind of creates a blank spot in my brain. But, you know, everybody does a little bit differently. One thing we do have that has worked really well is this a thing we call a work deck. And essentially, it's just Google Slides. With some rules. And so everybody in the company across all of our offices and across all of our teams has one way where we literally create Google Slides for a project. And we've developed a very simple template that is just how you enter an idea. And we call it a hook. And a hook consists of three elements, who, what, and why. It's the basis of a press release. It's like, what, you know, the brand did this to prove this or to accomplish this. It's very simple and you can read that. And the point of that is like, ooh, I can either feel that feels like that's something that a lot of people will talk about. It'll get a lot of attention or not. And then these are in these Google Slides and everybody, you put your name on the top. Everybody's expected to contribute. But the biggest unlock with the work decks is we outlawed commenting. You can't comment on the side of a Google Slide. And that was really a big deal here because when you could comment, it turned it into a place of critique and it wasn't a safe place to just throw your ideas out and try things and explore. And that's key to the creative process. Because when you could comment, you know, somebody would come in and be like, wow, this idea probably isn't possible, or this idea feels off brief, or this, and it's just like not helpful at all at this stage in the game where we're just ideating. We're at the beginning of the process. So eliminating commenting, so you can't comment, all you can do is contribute, has been a giant unlock for us. So, you know, every agency likes to say, you know, good ideas can come from anywhere. And I've been a part of a lot of agencies where that's said and it's just not true. And here with these tools, it really is like everybody, like front desk person to Gary V. You know, the expectation is like we're an idea company and we make those ideas. And so everybody contributes to ideas.
So and how is it like working with Gary V?
You know, he is awesome. I love him. I mean, I didn't know of him 3.5 years ago when they reached out to me. I wasn't familiar with VaynerMedia or Gary or anything. So I didn't have any of that preconceived notion or whatever, and got to know him and really, really vibed well. And in the 3 years I've been out here working with him, it's, you know, it's sometimes you scratch your head and just say, I don't know how a human being, goes at the speed and velocity that he does. It's not in my DNA to be like that. So it is very awe inspiring, but he's, you know, the thing that I don't think you really can capture unless you spend some time with him and work with him is super good dude. Like, he's just a good human. And that's really rare, I think, in general, unfortunately, but it's a lot, you know, very rare in this industry. Also very rare in people who are as successful as he is. Usually you get somewhere by stepping on people to get there. And he's just a really good example of someone who has gotten where he is without doing that. And it's really cool. So yeah, I dig the guy.
Yeah. He seems very, very real. So I can imagine what it must be like to work for him. So what are you most excited about at the moment, and what can we expect from VaynerMedia in the future?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of what I touched on before. Our approach to marketing is it's something we've been developing for a little bit. We're still in the process, but where we're going as it relates to how we even do this business of, you know, solving clients' business problems is fundamentally different than the majority of places that at least I'm aware of, or how everybody else is attacking it. And I get really excited about it because it's working, and it feels instinctively very correct with where the world is. You know, there's a lot of accurate too. I mean, sometimes it gets blown out of proportion, but there's a lot of accurate buzz in the industry of, you know, the advertising industry is dead. The old agency model is dead, and all these things, and every client budgets are shrinking, and brand and agencies are going out of business. And I think we're approaching it so vastly different. If for anything else, different at this point is good, because trying to stick with the same approach that worked in the Mad Men days for today's world is not working. And so I think what you'll continue to see as we become a little bit more vocal about it, as you start to see this work manifest itself in the marketplace, is this notion of a thing we called the volume model, which is what I explained to you before. Is we go out and through the tactic of making a bunch of ideas versus being hired to whittle it down to one idea, we go out with continually making ideas, and then we follow the momentum when we get a hit. It's very similar to how network television has always worked. You know, network television needs hits to survive. That's how they get, you know, a lot of viewers, and then that translates into advertisers. So they realized they couldn't, you know, invest in every bet they made, because some bets work and some don't. And so instead they said, well, they invented this thing called the pilot program, where it's like, we can set aside some money to constantly be making pilots of things. And And someone may have a really good show idea and we'll give them some money and they can make a pilot of that, a really good one. They'll be very resourceful and they'll figure out how to stretch this money to make something that will then go on television. So someone viewing it does not realize it's a pilot, or it's still not sure if it's going to be a show or not a show. So they're experiencing it and reacting to it in a natural state. And then based on how that goes, or usually, you know, pilots, a couple episodes or one or two episodes, that there's information that allows that network to then make a more informed decision of, cool, there's something here. Let's go all in on it. Let's put the big budget behind it. Let's make a few seasons, or we don't feel like this is in our interest. It's not an intelligent investment. And it's just that exact approach, but for marketing. And marketing has never been able to do it because it never had real-time feedback. And now, through the advent of social media, right, we actually have that. When you put out a piece of content as a brand or otherwise on Facebook, people are viewing it and reacting to it in a no different than anything. Right. You know, it's been consumed 100% natural. And the fact that we can look at how that's engaged with or not engaged with, and use that information to our advantage and to our clients' advantage is, it's a bit of it feels like a no-brainer, but it's not commonplace. And so I'm really excited for that narrative and the work supporting that narrative to start.
Yeah. You know,
that's trickling out into the world, because it's a game changer. It really is.
I can imagine. Yeah. Nowadays it's much easier to test things fast. And to see if something works, you can get feedback instantly nowadays on Instagram or all the other social media platforms.
Yeah, exactly.
So, one last question. What's your definition of creativity?
My definition of creativity is the act of making someone care about something.
All right.
I guess that's not the definition. That's the job. The job of creativity is to get someone to care about something that they may otherwise not care about. But I think, creativity is the substance to that job, right? It's creating interest. That's what creativity is.
To make people care.
That's right.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much, and for being here and sharing your story and how you're operating at VaynerMedia. It was really nice talking to you. What's the best place that we can follow you from?
I'm mostly active on Instagram and a little Twitter. My handle on everything forever has been Steve Happens, just Steve, and then Happens. But Instagram is where I'm probably the most active. And thank you for having me. It was fun to answer your questions and chat about all this stuff. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Really enjoyed talking to you. Well, thanks so much. And looking forward to see more of your creative work.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay, Steve. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this podcast with Steve Babcock as much as we enjoyed creating it. You can find more information about Steve in the show notes. I really enjoy creating these podcasts and talking to people like Steve and sharing content with you all guys. Well, if you haven't subscribed to this show yet, please subscribe to the Creative Insight Podcast. Also, all of the episodes are on my website, mikereinhardt.com. I would love to hear your feedback, and also leave me a review on iTunes. I have more episodes coming up and continue to seek what makes people tick in the digital landscape. So stay tuned. More inspiring guests coming up. Once again, my name is Mike Reinhardt. And you can follow me everywhere online, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the major platforms, and my website, mikereinhardt.com. Thanks for listening. See you in the next episode.